prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Does the cost and risk of conventional healthcare concern you? Wouldn't you prefer inexpensive solutions to health problems rather than disease management? If so, tune into Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, May 14th, 2014. Good afternoon, Alfred.
Hello, Melody.
Oh, a lot of action happening today. It's a good day. At least something's happening instead of just... everything staying the same.
Well, so just everything staying the same isn't necessarily bad. It's when everything goes down. That's when it goes. That's when staying the same is preferable to going down, but it's not preferable to going up. And today we're going up.
Well, we have gold up today, $11, almost 12 at 1307.60. You have silver up 23 at 1986. Platinum was up 29, 2% on the day, 1487, and palladium was up 10 at $830. The USDX today was down 0.06, but still 80.06. And crude oil was up another 50 cents today, pushing it over 102.16, 102.16. And the paper markets today, they had a little bit of a rough day, but you know what's 100 points? You know, it really doesn't mean all that much, but you have the Dow down 101 points at 16,613. You have the Nasdaq down 29 at 4,100. The S&P was also down 8 at 1888. The 10-year yield down 0.08 at 2.54%. That really dropped today. Isn't that interesting? 2.54% on the 10-year yield, with the dollar down 0.06 and gold up 11. So, interesting day in the markets, Alfred. We also have some interesting information about the silver pricing, silver fix.
Yeah, we've got an article from Reuters. says historic silver price benchmark bites the dust as banks pull out. All right. Silver fixed to cease after August 14th. The 117-year-old London silver price benchmark, or fix, will cease on August 14th, as operators said, as regulatory scrutiny of price setting intensifies across markets. Now, this is a pretty extraordinary story. The fix is set once a day by banks getting together via telephone to work out what the work out a price based on deals between their clients. It is used by producers, consumers, and investors who use it to base contracts on. Okay. Now, in other words, some people in London get together and say, well, what shall we price? How shall we price silver today? And between themselves, major banks primarily, they decide, they set the price. This is clearly not the free market talking, right? This isn't the price that would be established if people were simply buying silver on the free market. You, me, Melody, whoever else. Go ahead and say, well, I'd like to pay X number of dollars. Somebody say, I'll pay this much. It's essentially an auction.
Well, that's how those banks do it. They do say...
But they don't include bank, the great unwashed.
Well, one bank will say, we will pay this amount. The other bank will say, well, we'll until they all agree on a price.
Yeah, but they agree. It's not the people out here.
Well, they have customers that are willing, and investors and so forth, they're what they can sell it for. So,
but it's,
you know, it's all a matter.
From the general public. Someone who with a lot of the money is deciding what the price of
silver
should
be. Well, we'll talk. Go on, and then we'll talk about that.
Yeah, the fix is set once a day by banks getting together. We've read that already. The announcement by the London Silver Market Fixing, LTD, on Wednesday left a question mark over the role of a benchmark, which could be replaced by an electronic alternative. The London Bullion Market Association, LBMA, said it had launched a consultation among market participants to try and ensure that there is something that replaces the silver fix. All right? They're not, I don't think they're going to succeed. They say they're going to try to do this. I don't believe they're going to succeed. If this silver fix goes down, as explained in the balance of this, all right, well, let me go through it. The gold and silver fix, gold and silver fixes, along with other commodity benchmarks, has come under increasing scrutiny by regulators in Europe and the United States since the London Interbank Offered Rate LIBOR manipulation case last year. All right. The banks are also facing lawsuits accusing them of alleged gold price manipulation. What this means is that these major banks will not participate in any new price fixing scheme devised to replace the current London silver markets fixing scheme. If the banks, if the major banks are out of the silver price fixing scheme, who could be in? Who's going to replace them? They're not going to, well, they're being sued and significantly and perhaps even facing some criminal liability. I don't know that to be a fact, but it's not impossible. They're under great scrutiny right now. It's sufficient to make them abandon a business that's been profitable for 114 years. We're out of here. We quit. Who is going to pick this up and say, oh, well, we'll run it? And I don't think anyone will. It's not impossible. I know there will be significant incentive to have some sort of a substitute mechanism for fixing the price of silver and fixing the price of gold. There will be significant incentive. The system wants it, but they can't take the legal scrutiny. They can't handle the lawsuits, and therefore I doubt that they'll get back in by August of this year. So there'll probably be no replacement for the London silver market fixing when it closes its door on August 14th. This implies that the price of silver may return to free market control. Gold, price of gold, will almost certainly follow. We can anticipate that if, that to the extent, and I'm not saying that gold is going to be turned loose on August 14th, that's not what I'm saying, but if they're going to turn silver loose on August 14th, at least in part, we can expect that the price of silver will probably rise. it is unlikely. I mean, it's just almost hard to believe that it would fall after the manipulation, at least by this outfit in Europe, ends. The price of silver will almost certainly go up. Gold will probably go up. But we'll probably also see perhaps more volatility in the market. It may be that the price of silver may skyrocket after August 14th. Could be. But if it does, we can also expect it'll make that big peak and then another significant decline. It's hard to say what's going to happen, but without the price fixing, prices will generally go up, in my opinion, but there will probably be a great deal more volatility than what we've had in the past. This article continues. It says lawsuits have not targeted the silver fix, but in a five-year probe of the U.S. commodity future trade, the U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission investigated allegations that some of the world's biggest bullion banks distorted silver futures prices. After 7,000 staff hours of investigation, the regulator found no evidence of wrongdoing and dropped the probe last September. Well, I think that's a bunch of nonsense, but just the same, I think there were dead bodies laying all over the place, figuratively speaking, and yet the investigators say we found no evidence of murder. Nevertheless, Deutsche Bank, HSBC, and Bank of Nova Scotia will continue to participate in the London fix until the August deadline. The other banks may have indicated to the regulator that they were looking to withdraw as well. And so to make this an orderly affair, Deutsche was asked to postpone the date of resignation. Deutsche was all ready to go out. They were going to leave. They were already scheduled, said, we're out of here. We quit. But they've been persuaded to hang on until August 14th, and all the banks, major banks, will quit at that time. I don't anticipate a replacement. Do you think they can get a replacement, Melody?
They could. I mean, I believe that they could. My question is, other than their lawsuits and so forth, I mean, it's pretty difficult to prove. And we all know that, look at the LIBOR rate scandal. I mean, what did they prove out of that? A few people got slapped on their hands. So I'm not quite sure that somehow, some way, if you read between the lines, that I guarantee you're going to hear all kinds of stories on what this will relate to, why they're doing it, and so forth. However, after speaking with my bullion buyer today, he told me, he says, this is one of the worst things that could happen to pricing of precious metals. He says, right now you have transparency, and the fix actually gives order to the market.
Well, I agree with that. There'll be more.
Now you can have big bullion banks price the metal any way they want. No one is really knowing what they're going, how they can hedge themselves, for people with investments, jewelers. That's a lot bigger than just the, what we think of the big bullion banks. You have a lot of businesses that base their daily or their weekly buys on the London fix. Now, he says, this could actually be so chaotic for the markets.
Mm-hmm.
He says no one will know what to base their pricing on. He thinks this is a horrible thing to happen. He says they could be used the New York COMEX. He says that basically trades almost 24 hours a day. He says, we can start using these numbers. He says, but everybody uses the London fix. And he said the company might be replaced, and perhaps the fixing might continue with different entities within the company. And so I think there's a lot going on with the market. I mean, if you look at the silver purchases in the past, now I'm not saying that these purchases coming out of the mint is a reflection of what the decision from end of fixing coming out of London. However, I'm still curious as to who is buying all this silver. I mean, it's a tremendous amount of silver that is being purchased already for 2014. We're at almost 20.5 million, and for the end of 2013, there was 42.6 million sold. So that was the biggest year ever for silver, and it looks like this year will beat that, unless something strange happens later on in the year. So significantly ahead of last year's numbers for silver. And so it's We're going to...
All right, let's talk about that for a second.
...carry on this conversation on what is going to be happening in this market without sensationalizing the possibilities. It could be good for silver, and then it you know, again, there's no transparency.
How much of a surprise can it be that the London fix is going to go under? I mean, we're just hearing about it. We're just hearing about it August 14th. But how much of a surprise can it be to people on the inside? I mean, this can't be the first time anyone's had a suspicion that this was going to happen. People in the know should have anticipated this for months. And the reason I bring that up is, who's buying all these Silver Eagles? Somebody's buying them, and where are they going? And it sounds to me, if I had to guess, and I'm only guessing, that's all it is just speculation. But it sounds to me like people who have already recognized that the London fix was going to stop on August 14th, they are perhaps anticipating that the price of silver will increase dramatically at that point. And they're rounding up silver now as fast as they can lay hands on it. Does that sound plausible to you, or does it sound just, you know, wild?
Well, I mean, I think agreed. And of course, you know, I'm not sure that the number of ounces total sold, the bars and so forth. But, I mean, I'm just using the Silver Eagles as an example.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that you will see, and I agree with you, Al, you will see much more volatility in the markets. And we could even see silver drop significantly, quickly. And then it could also be up $4 or $5 in a day. You could pick. And I think there's... if they need to, you know, if for some reason, I never bought into the shortages of silver in the COMEX. Gold, I understand, but there's a lot of silver out there. It's very difficult. It's a byproduct. You know, it's a little bit more difficult to determine whether there's shortages of true silver or not. And whenever these shortages, whenever these shortage stories circulated, you know, I always check with my sources, and there never seemed to be any. That's not the same as a shortage of product. Two different things. So I don't know if this is a way to which they can satisfy any shortages.
Who can satisfy
where
the
shortages? Where these bullion banks, if they're short, if there's any way that they can... by doing this, if there's some way they can resupply the COMEX or any of these exchanges, I don't know.
Well, the thing
I find it interesting because
the thing that's interesting to me about these silver sales, no one seems to know who's buying the silver, and yet record amounts are being sold of Silver Eagles. The implication is somebody believes the price of physical silver is due to rise significantly in the foreseeable future. And that's not inconsistent with what we're talking about with the London silver fix ending by August 14th.
Well, last month we really saw in the beginning of this month. Now we're beginning to see single buyers come in for large volumes of buys. We've had several large buys of Silver Eagles this month, you know, in a very short period of time, probably more than I had in the past.
Okay, you're so, talking about sales of discount gold and silver. You're not just talking about mint sales or the U.S. Mint.
Well, I'm talking first about the U.S. Mint, and now I'm adding commentary saying that I have seen a huge increase in Silver Eagle purchases, large volumes,
mm-hmm.
not just a box here and a box there, but multiple of boxes. So it's, you know, whether it's just again, it's signs, it's indications.
Yep.
The mindset is changing, and it might be, this might not be a good thing for the markets, but then again, there's answers or questions that need to be answered here in the next couple of days.
They won't be fully answered perhaps until sometime toward the end of August, but that's, we're talking about August 14th, basically 90 days from now, 3 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, three months until, in theory, at least the silver fix in Europe, or London more particularly, terminates. And then we wait to see what happens in the rest of the world and here in the United States. But all things together, can you put these pieces together? And it's not necessarily true that, you know, these connections exist the way we're talking about, but it does point to higher prices for silver. A lot of people must believe silver is going higher in the near future. I'm Alfred Adusk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adusk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs.
All kinds of strange things are happening, folks. Take advantage of these prices. We have Silver Eagles, $275 over spot. And, of course, if you buy boxes of $500 or more, we can help you out a little bit. It includes free shipping on those prices. So what a great opportunity to get in here before the markets get crazy. And, of course, the same way with gold. Get in at these levels. Great buys on $20 gold pieces. The premium spread between Gold Eagles and $20 gold pieces are rising. Remember, we were selling them for like $20 difference in spread. Now they're 120 some dollars difference, so they're beginning to pull away from the bullion prices. You still have time to get in buying at these low, low prices. Yesterday we talked about Mint State 65, $20 gold pieces. They've actually been going up in price while bullion has been going down over this past year. So great. There's some great value coins that are priced very good here at Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. I'm currently working on a comparison of $20 gold, breaking all these myths of why you shouldn't. I'm going to tell you why you should, and I'm going to have my own 10 reasons of why you need to have $20 gold pieces in your portfolio. So make sure you sign up, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you go to the newsletter and sign up, and you can also listen to this radio program from the website. Just go to the radio page. There is a bar there that you click on at the live time, 4 p.m. Eastern time, and you can listen to it directly from the website. And, of course, our archives are posted on a daily basis. You just scroll down a little bit. You have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. You pick on the day you want to listen to, and then we actually archive it on a longer basis at a little different section to the right of the site. So just so you know, you can listen to the program live or to the archives directly from the website.
You were talking about myths that affect precious metals.
$20 gold pieces, correct?
Mm-hmm. Do you know what the opposite of a myth is?
What, Al?
A mister. See, I can hear you chuckling in the back there. Right? You wouldn't give me the satisfaction of laughing out loud, but I can hear you chuckling in the background. So if you're concerned about misters, all right, we may have something on that before it's all over. What else do we have, Melody?
Talking about the price of gold.
Go ahead.
Jimmy Rogers.
Oh, yeah, he's got an article in the Daily Ticker. They interviewed Durant. He was interviewed on the Daily Ticker, and he talked about, the headline is, gold is a buy under $1,000 an ounce. Here's why it could get there, and this is from Jim Rogers. Jim Rogers, as most of you know, wealthy man, been in the gold business for, wealthy investor. Certainly in part in gold. And
he is part of the insiders. He was one of Chris's partners, so he is an insider.
Yeah. And the article says, gold is traditionally an investment of choice when inflation is rising or global tensions are growing. But this year, despite the conflict between Russia and the Ukraine, gold prices haven't moved much. And inflation in much of the developed world is muted. Well, that's not exactly true. In fact, inflation isn't muted, but reports of inflation are muted, at least here in this country. Our government tells us that the official inflation rate, which does not include the rising prices of food and energy, is less than 2%. But John Williams at ShadowStats.com tells us the real inflation rate, including the prices of food and energy, as measured by the Consumer Price Index, is up to about 5%. The article, the point being, inflation isn't muted, but reports of inflation are muted, officially suppressed in this country. Investor Jim Rogers says, I'm not buying gold at this moment. But if the opportunity comes along, and it will in the next year or two, I will buy more. Now, what's that mean? It means that Rogers understands that gold is a great long-term investment. He says he won't buy it now, but he will buy more in the future. That means his future outlook. He's looking to the horizon. He's saying gold is going to be a great investment, or at least that's the implication. When the Daily Ticker's anchor Lauren Lister asked Rogers in a video what such an opportunity might look like. Rogers said that a 50% decline in gold prices to under $1,000 an ounce would justify buying the precious metal. Now, that's a 50% decline from its record high of just under $2,000 an ounce in August 2011. But Rogers also says if America goes to war with Iran, he'd be begging to buy gold at $1,600 an ounce. So Rogers, on the one hand, he says if it goes under 1,000, he says it's going to be a spectacular buy, and that's obvious. I think that should be obvious to anyone. But if we go to war in Iran, with Iran, if you can get it for $1,600 an ounce, that will be a spectacular buy, which means he's not really given us a lot of insight into what he thinks is going to happen. He's sitting back and saying, well, it might be up, it might be down, we don't know yet. Rogers says a 50% correction every 3 or 4 or 5 years is more normal for an asset class, and therefore a reason prices could fall from here. He's saying they could fall from $1,300 down to less than $1,000 an ounce, $1,000 an ounce or less. And he says because historically there have been 50%, we have a 50% correction every 3 to 5 years in most asset classes. The prices go up, then they fall down by 50% compared to, you know, what their peak was, and then they start going up again and up and down. But it may be, I'm going to observe that it may be historically and normally true that there's a 50% correction every 3 or 5 years for an asset class such as precious metals, commodities, stocks, and so on. But what is the normal correction for an asset like gold, whose price rise has been aggressively and openly suppressed for most of a decade? You see what I'm getting to here? Without the efforts by the powers that be to suppress the price of gold artificially below its free market value, can we still expect a normal 50% correction? Or has much of that expected correction all been already consumed by organized price manipulation? In other words, if price hadn't been manipulated in gold, it went up to $2,000 in 2011. How far would it have gone without price manipulation? Could we have seen $3,000 gold? It's not impossible. I don't know where it would have gone, but it's not impossible. And if we then had a 50% correction, would it take it back to 1,000 or would it only take it to 1,500? Insofar as Rogers is relying on these normal corrections historically, I doubt that this normalcy includes the idea that a particular asset class has been systemically suppressed. Its price has been held down. The price rose the whole time, but it never rose as quickly as it might. All right, they held it down where for most of the years it was rising by maybe 20% a year. And then the last 2 years that we've had that has been changed. But I think you get my point. Does this make any sense, Melody? Are we going to see a 50% correction given that we've already suppressed the price by who knows how much? What is the real price of gold right now on the free market? Anyone know?
Melody? Well, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, there's no, markets don't go up forever and ever. You have some sort of a pullback. And yes, we can say with the price being manipulated, you know, heck, 50% could have been at 2000 or 1900. So
yeah, I understand.
So no, I mean, the fundamentals for gold and silver, and Jimmy Rogers also, he probably already has a ton of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, he can afford, and, you know, he has, you know, I right now I believe he likes agriculture, and certainly with the price of food, mm-hmm. and everything rising, that's really a good bet if you have other income other than gold and silver income, or funds to be placed in that sector, could be a very good area to play in. Today, the producer price index came out, and it was adjusted 0.6% from March to April. And, of course, the increases were led by higher food prices and greater retailer and wholesale profit margins. what I found interesting about the whole report, and it's really kind of, we had 2 months of big increases that have listed wholesale inflation from historically low levels. And of course, we all know it's higher, but from the report, the producer price index rose just 1.2% in 2013 and 1.4% increase in 2012. Food costs jumped 2.7% in April. That is the highest in more than 3 years. And that was also an 8.4% increase in meat prices.
Yeah, and we are talking on a monthly basis. We're not talking about, well, let's be clear about this. You're not talking about a 2.6% increase in the price of food on an annual basis. You're saying 2.6% in 1 month alone, right?
That's correct.
On an annual basis, we're talking something like 28%. You understand? Folks, that's a significant increase. Imagine that the price of your food is up 28% by this time of year from now.
What about meat? 8.4%.
I understand. At 8.4%, we're talking 100% increase over the price of a year. That means your steaks will double. All of a sudden, everybody is going to wish, all the young ladies are going to want to marry a cowboy. And these guys have access to steak. They're rich people. You know, this goes to part of what we talked about a little bit earlier. One of the articles talked about inflation is muted. No, the reports of inflation are muted. All right? That's what's being muted. The real inflation is significant and perhaps growing more significant, at least in terms of food. So what else we have, Melody?
Well, did you know the government is running out of money to repair?
They can't run out of money. The only thing they can run out of is paper and ink.
Roads,
run
bridges,
out of paper and ink. Now we have a problem.
In ports. Government is running out of money to repair deteriorating roads, bridges, and ports. This is what Obama says. And he says more federal spending will help avert a looming crisis. I didn't know we had a looming crisis that could stifle economic growth and torment commuters. So certainly we know our infrastructure in this country is so deteriorated and haven't been kept up. Our electric grids have power grids.
Well, the important thing is that we have money to provide medical care for illegal aliens. And if we have to choose between infrastructure and taking care of illegal aliens, let's take care of the illegal aliens, Melody.
But so he's doing some stomp in the ground in New York, the Hudson River crossing point. It opened its traffic in 1955, is being replaced at a cost of $3.9 billion. And the spending will not stop. And of course,
yeah, actually it will, though. You know, the spending will stop. And the reason it'll stop is because increasingly government, they can't raise taxes on people who are unemployed.
Eventually, it'll stop.
They can't raise taxes on the people that are employed and are already under a great deal of stress. And the only option they have to gain more money is they've got to borrow more money. But insofar, the Federal Reserve jumped in to replace private and foreign investors that pretty much bailed on U.S. treasuries in the last year or two. Federal Reserve was taking up to 70-80% of the treasuries that were being sold, and now they're tapering, they're bailing out, say, well, we're not going to buy any more of that paper. Where is the government going? It can't raise taxes to any significant degree, I'm able to understand, without causing riots, practically, and it can't borrow any more money. So how is it going to keep spending? And if the government can't spend, how will the economy continue to turn? How will the wheels continue to turn? I've seen some estimates where government allegedly is directly involved in 40% of the economy. Insofar as they're unable to spend, a big chunk of the economy has to close down. And where do we go then? Can't borrow, can't tax. Where are we going to go? And the only answer really is we're going to have to find a way to work our way work ourselves out of this mess. That means we're going to have to rebuild industry in this country. We're going to probably have to go through an era of austerity while we do and rebuild industry, rebuild infrastructure, which is to some degree what happened during the Great Depression. I know my dad was in the CCs, Conservation Corps. What was it, CCCs? Civilian Conservation Corps, I think that was the name of it, I don't recall. But he was out building things and parks and roads and one thing or another like that, I don't know. None of this points to a painless solution. Somebody is going to have to be a real genius in order to get us out of the problems we're facing, because we have dug a hole. That's, you know, we haven't provided ourselves with a ladder. We keep digging this hole, this depth, make it deeper and deeper, and yet we don't have a ladder to get out. We do have commercial announcements, though, and that'll get us out of this segment of the program. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cedarstrom. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. We got a caller from Arkansas. Shall we take the caller, Melody?
Yes, please.
Okay. Joe, what you got for us?
Okay. I wanted to comment on the report that you just made about Obama saying that the government has a crisis and needs money to repair the roads and the bridges and the ports. And my comment is this. Okay, as I understand it, our trade deficit runs something like $500 billion a year, and the economists say that there's about a 7 times turnover of every dollar that's spent into the economy. So if we didn't have that trade deficit, if we were buying stuff from ourselves instead of buying stuff from foreign countries, then that money that's sent overseas would instead stay here and generate something like $3 trillion, $500 billion worth of income, which the government would no doubt get a healthy chunk of in taxes, and that would go a long way, I would think, to giving the money to giving the government the money it needs to do these repairs on the roads and bridges and ports, you know, that Obama says that they need. But I don't think Obama really cares about solving any problems. I think what he's doing is he's always looking for a way to claim that there is an absolute emergency and crisis for which the government needs to raise taxes and grab more money from the people. So I think that's what he's doing there.
I agree with you.
And any comments you have would be welcome.
Say what? I didn't catch your last.
I think that Obama doesn't really care about repairing the roads and the bridges and the ports and, you know, solving any problems. I think what he's out to do is always claim that there is some kind of emergency, some kind of crisis for which the government needs more money and therefore has to raise taxes on the people and take more of the wealth of the people.
I agree with you. And it's all done under the basis of emergency. There was a report issued by the Senate, probably goes back into the 1950s, maybe the 1960s, where they warned that if the state of emergency continues in this country, we may lose all semblance of freedom. What they're talking about is the government declared a national emergency back in 1933 when they removed the gold from circulation. It was based on a national emergency. And the thing about an emergency is that under the pretext of emergency or in the midst of an emergency, the laws are suspended. Suppose you're driving on a street and it's marked one way with a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit and it's only going north and there's a fire in a building and you got to get away from it rapidly and you are now driving the wrong way on the one-way street and you're going 40 miles an hour to get away from this building that's on fire and maybe exploding. Are you going to get a traffic ticket? Will the cops pull you over and say, well, sir, you're going the wrong way on the one-way street? They will not, and at least they should not, and the reason is because it's recognized you're in a state of emergency. The laws are suspended in a state of emergency. And one of the things that the government, they have maintained, that 1933 emergency has been maintained to this day, and they are operating at all times under several states of emergency at the same time. They got the money thing from 1933. They had one a few years ago where some African nation had a problem and they declared it created a national emergency. They have several bases for declaring we have a national emergency, and under that pretext, government can do anything it needs to do without obeying the Constitution. Most people don't realize how significant this state of emergency is. It's presumed that we're in a state of emergency right now. And so long as that presumption continues, we could have a police state, we could have military marching in the streets, we can have Homeland Security coming down here and shooting people. There is no law in a state of emergency. The only law is survival. You do the best you can in order to survive under the circumstances, and that's the fundamental law. So, does Obama want to maintain a state of emergency? Sure, and so does most of the rest of the government. If we ever got out of a state of emergency, the government would have no pretext for extending, the federal government would have no pretext for extending its powers down within the states. The massive federal influence, you know, there used to be a time when I was a kid, if you got into an argument, someone would say, don't make a federal case out of it, right? And what they meant by that is it was very rare for litigation to wind up in federal courts. Everything took place at the state level. Today, it's not the least bit uncommon for litigation to go to federal level because the federal government has intruded into the states with all sorts of regulations and laws that they are imposing on the states, and they lay a foundation for suing under federal law rather than just suing in state law. One of the results of this is we have so many lawsuits coming that the Supreme Court can only hear a small percentage of the lawsuits that are appealed to the Supreme Court. They write the vast majority of them off. They say, hey, we can't get to you. Whatever they said at the last appellate court, that's the way it is because we're too busy to hear what you have to say. This is a function of emergency that has federalized, nationalized this whole country. And the problems that historically were solved at a state level or a local level are increasingly going to the federal government because they've written all that many laws. So all I'm saying is, folks, you need to be very wary of government officials and officers who would try to persuade you that we are in the midst of another emergency. I guarantee it's hazardous to your freedom. It's hazardous to your liberty. You will wind up living in a police state based on the presumption that we are in an emergency. What else do we have, Melody?
Oh, is he gone as the caller? We want to thank him for calling in.
Okay, we thank Joe for calling in from Arkansas, and I believe Joe is gone. True? Is that true, Joe? Joe doesn't answer.
No, I'm still here.
Oh.
Well, I guess you're surprised. Surprise.
You
all right, Joe.
Do you have anything else you'd like to say, Joe?
Well, yeah, I could add a few things. Another thing that you used to hear in this country that you don't hear anymore is it used to be if somebody said that they wanted to do something that was kind of unusual, people would say, well, go ahead and do it. It's a free country. But you don't hear that anymore. I think people know in their hearts it ain't a free country anymore. And I've noticed that the local governments, you know, always use this state of crisis, state of emergency also. Like, our local city government here in Arkansas, Fayetteville, Arkansas, and all over the county, all over this area, you know, whenever they want to raise taxes, they will, which is all the time, they constantly want to raise taxes. And so they will always claim that there's some kind of emergency, especially with the schools. You know, people will want to do anything if it's for the children. So they'll always be claiming there's some kind of crisis in the school for which urgently need more money. And so we've got to raise taxes for that, and people generally go for it. And roads is another thing. You know, people always want their roads, it seems like. So they think there's some crisis with the roads, and we need money to fix the roads. You know, people will always go for that, too. And another thing, when there's a bill that the local governments want to pass, but it's unpopular with the public, generally the law provides for that the bill has to be read three times in three separate meetings of the government and then voted on with public comment. And so what they'll do, if there's something they want to pass that the people don't like, they'll declare a state of emergency and say that under the state of emergency, you know, we can pass the bill on one reading, and we don't have to take public comment or something like that. So, yeah, the local government do that all the time,
too. Yeah, I agree, which is just evidence. The law says they have to read it three times. That's probably in your state constitution. And they're just saying, no, this is an emergency. We don't have time to obey the law. And the government, same thing happens down here in Texas. So it's required that they read the law three times, three separate days. If they did that, if they followed the law, it just follows that they couldn't get at least two-thirds of the legislation that's currently being passed in Texas, they wouldn't have time for it. Got to read the same bill three times, three different days. It would detract from their ability to just broker more and more and more laws. And it happens under the state of emergency, and it's all fraud. The only emergency we have is a corrupt government, unconstitutional government, treasonous government. That's the basis of the emergency. We don't have any other emergencies we have to worry about other than Obama and the Congress and the Senate and the federal courts. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's the same with whatever they're saying about the climate, whatever they're saying about the weather, that we've got a climate crisis. We've got, what is it, climate chaos, I think, is the latest thing that they're using. And right now, here in Arkansas, it's kind of unusually cool, you know, for May. It's about 46 degrees here today, and so it is kind of unusually cool, except that I found out a few years ago that this happens so regularly that the old-timers had a name for it. They called it blackberry winter. Pretty much every year in May, when the blackberry bushes had their white flowers on them, there would be a cold spell for a while where it was kind of unusually cool for a while, and the old-timers would call that blackberry winter. So it's really nothing unusual, but since people expect it to be somewhat warmer in May, you know, this can contribute, I suppose, to the government's ability to declare that we have a climate crisis or a chaotic climate, and we've got to do something about it. We've got to raise your taxes, and we've got to restrict your freedom.
Oh, we got trouble right here in River City with a capital T, and that rhymes with, Obama or the presidency, I guess. You may remember that song, some of you, with Music Man. I think that was it back in the 50s, 60s, something like that. I don't recall exactly. But they're always talking us into this idea that we have all these big problems, 1.1, and the only one who can solve the problem, of course, is big government. And the truth is, big government is the cause of probably every major problem we've got in this country. And they keep saying, oh, we'll fix it. Give us more money. Give us more of your obedience, and we'll fix your problems for you. Joe, do you know anything about the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report?
I've heard of it, yeah. And
okay.
I actually got a copy of my city's Comprehensive Financial Report some years ago, but you know, I don't have much background in accounting. It's not something I have a lot of interest in, is this whole thing of accounting. And, you know, I didn't really understand it.
The point to it is that the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report is different from the budget. The budget is a projection of how much governments at the local, state, and federal level will take in and how much they will spend next year. A budget is a projection that goes into the future, and it doesn't include all of their revenue sources. But when you do the Comprehensive Financial Report, that reflects what actually was brought in and what was actually spent in the previous year. The Comprehensive Annual Financial Report gives us a true story of what's happening at the government level. And what Walter Burian, he was the first one to stumble into this thing back around 1990, thereabouts. And he read the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report for New Jersey and realized that the state had millions of dollars, maybe billions, I don't recall, but far more than it needed. He read it because the state was saying, oh my gosh, we have an emergency, we've got to have more money. And he read the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report closely and realized that they had more money than they needed for several years. All right? They had already brought it in, and they were squirreling it away in secret accounts and one thing and another, but it was reported in the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. The point was, they didn't need higher taxes. If you looked at the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, you'd see that they'd already taken so much money that they wouldn't need to charge any taxes for several years. They could get by with what they have. And they keep coming along, so, oh, we've got trouble, we've got an emergency, give us more money, let us tax, let us regulate. It's all contrary to the best interests of the American people. None of us are being well served by this. None of us are being well served by the claim of emergency. It's all fraud. And I'll tell you one other thing about emergencies. We send people to Congress to do what? Essentially to deal with emergencies. Operating on the assumption that the Constitution and existing laws are okay, the only reason we should have to pass more laws is because new and strange circumstances have occurred. In a sense, the purpose of law is to eliminate any emergencies. If we have an emergency, Congress's business is to put the fire out. It's like being in the fire department. We send them to Congress, and if there's an emergency, figure it out and solve the emergency. They have maintained a persistent state of emergency for now something like close to 90 years, since 1933. They haven't solved the emergency. They've maintained it so they can exploit it to our disadvantage, to the disadvantage of the American people. So, emergencies are bad news for all of us. Joe, you got anything? We've got about 30 seconds for you if you do.
Okay, I'll just add that I think that probably the bottom line is that people constantly underestimate the corruption and the monstrous criminality of the people in the government. And, you know, just people generally think that, you know, nobody could possibly be that criminal and that corrupt, and so they constantly, you know, give the people in the government credit for good intentions where there absolutely are none.
Yeah, and we write off the mistakes as just negligence, stupidity, whatever. It's not that. This is a persistent problem that's pushing us into a police state and into a state of bondage. We're losing our freedom, we're losing our liberty, and we're losing it because we are fool enough to trust the government. I don't care if you're talking about the Republicans, the Democrats. You trust any of them, you be dumb. I'm Alfred Addisk. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Joe from Arkansas, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.